welcome back. Mark Levine is our guest in this hour. Izzy is my date, and we tango every hour, too. Former legislative counsel to Democratic Congressman Barney Frank and the House Judiciary, Homeland Security, and Financial Services Committees. He currently hosts the Washington-based radio television talk show, The Inside Scoop, and the Ruckus Caucus on Pacifica Radio, WPFW 89.3 FM. He also frequently appears on television on Fox, MSNBC, CNN, Fox Business, and CNBC. He's tangled with everyone from Bill O'Reilly on the right to his Pacifica co-host on the left and me on occasion. He joins us live from our nation's capital. I'm on the West Coast in Los Angeles. Hey, Mark, how you doing? It's already hour two. You know, I'm so tired. I can't even keep how many hours I've done. Well, you know, I mean, honestly, we'll be very frank with people. Sometimes we do pre-tapes, you know what I mean, of interviews at different times. Mm-hmm. And I sometimes forget when I'm live, when we're taped, because it's all, you know, it's all the
same.
Well,
Leslie, welcome to hour two of the Leslie Marshall Show.
Thank you very much, Mark. Thank you. Welcome to hour two as well. Oh, there is a poll that shows that the midterm momentum belongs to the GOP. But there are also some information out today in the news that I was reading this morning, some stuff in Yahoo, Reuters, AP, that shows the Democrats may come back a bit strong. But let's talk about the GOP momentum going into the midterms right now.
Well, they definitely have got the game to lose at this point. That doesn't mean, listen, the election hasn't happened yet. There's still a week to go. If everyone listening to our voices will get out and vote, we could change something. But let's face it, if we don't change something, they are going to win the Senate. It may happen in Alaska. It may happen in Louisiana. We're not quite sure which state which, but pretty much every indication is about a 65% chance that the Republicans are going to take over the Senate. Now, remember, 65% chance, that's two out of three, but one in three comes up one in three times. So really, it's just a question of the problem with Democrats is they're too complacent. They vote in presidential years, they don't vote in midterms, and they think that they don't matter. And too many people are just sort of want to throw up their hands and give up on the whole system, and they won't vote, and that's going to really hurt us next Tuesday.
You know, I want to share with you something that came out today in the news. I mean, this is a sprint now, no more, you know, jogging into the next Tuesday U.S. midterm elections. But there are new polls that show some besieged Democrats are holding their own. That complicates the narrative for the GOP. The GOP, like you said, rightly so, Mark, unfortunately for us, Democrats right now are on track to seize the Senate majority. But let's take a look at what's happened with the polls in some states with this sprint. Alaska, in particular, bears very good news for the president. Two recent surveys show the incumbent Senator Mark Begich with a substantial lead. And these are the first polls in a month that put him ahead of Dan Sullivan, his Republican challenger. The Alaska-based Republican-leaning firm, Helenthal & Associates, released a poll putting him ahead by 10 points. Just a couple of days ago.
No, I don't buy 10 points.
Wait. Ivan Moore Research Group released a poll on Facebook showing Begich was a 48.3%, Sullivan 41.6%. That's almost a 7% difference. Now, another thing is we have to point out that polling is unreliable in Alaska. I mean, it's remote. It's a sparsely populated state. And as a very large percentage of independent voters, and it's a very conservative state. But the results were significant enough for the New York Times to shift Alaska from likely Republican in the toss-up column. And by the way, Georgia, Iowa, and Kansas are in those columns as well. Do you agree with the New York Times toss-up Alaska, Georgia, Iowa, Kansas?
I think Kansas is probably our best bet at the moment. That's for the independents to beat Pat Roberts. I think we can win in Kansas. I think Mark Begich will have the majority of registered voters. The problem is likely voters. A lot of people in Alaska just don't vote. And so the problem with that is that they may not show up. A lot of them are out in the bush and are really, really not quite sure. Georgia, I'll tell you, Sam Nunn's daughter, Michelle Nunn's doing a lot better. I think we have a chance in Georgia. Iowa's looking tough. So these are all very, very close stakes. They could go either way. And frankly, it's amazing. News in the next 6 days could actually change all four. You know, if there's another Ebola case, if Obama says something silly or dumb, it's really hard to know. The problem is complacency. If you look at where people would support, all registered voters, Democrats win these elections. The problem is Republicans are motivated to go out and vote. A lot of Democrats are sitting at home.
And in addition to that, we have to look at when you say, so the president says something dumb. Now, the president didn't, but somebody allegedly in the Obama administration called Benjamin Netanyahu a chicken blank. And is that damaging enough with some people being so pro-Israel, or does that not really matter because it's not high on the hit parade of issues that the American voter cares about?
Well, it's a stupid thing to say. It's certainly impolitic. I don't think it affects Iowa or Alaska. Georgia, there's definitely Jewish voters in Atlanta. It's a silly thing to say. It will affect a few, but I don't think too many, frankly, are concerned about one comment by one aide. It wasn't Obama that said it, and frankly, people who are strongly pro-Israel are may not be voting for Obama. It's really the Republicans. It depends. I mean, I'm pro-Israel and a strong Democrat, so I'm the exception. But no, I don't think that is major enough to really push the needle in one way or another.
I want to talk about Iowa. I mean, I would agree with you. In Iowa, Loras College had a poll, but it's like, you know, 1,121 registered voters that put Democrat Bruce Braley up by one percentage point. They are even at 44% to 44%. So even though Iowa may be tough, it's not like, you know, Democrat Bruce Braley has got, like here in California, the state for governor, the Republican challenger to Jerry Brown has a 17% deficit against the governor. And in Iowa, you know, you have 44% to 44%. So why do we give that automatically to the Republican? Because all the polls I'm looking at are dead heat.
You know, Iowa is one of those purple, slightly leaning blue states. I mean, Iowa voted for President Obama both times. It also voted for John Kerry, but just barely. In fact, as I recall, I think it went for Gore and didn't vote for Kerry or vice versa. So it's right in the middle. Again, it has to do with the passion. They're looking not just at who you're going to vote for, but who's more likely to vote. And the polls, when they ask you who you plan to vote for, Democrats actually do okay. We win the Senate. It's when they say, are you likely to vote? And Republicans are saying, hell yeah. And Democrats are like, yeah, if I get a chance. And that difference in motivation, really, is what will, I'm afraid, make the difference. In 2010, that's what we saw. It wasn't that people suddenly became more Republican in 2010. It's that Republicans voted and Democrats didn't. We have a problem. A lot of the Democratic base, whether it's young people or African-Americans or immigrants, a lot of Democratic base are four-year voters. They're presidential voters. They think midterms don't matter, or they don't care, or they don't know. And that's a real problem for our party. I actually think we do very well.
But we also have other problems for our party. Mark, in Maryland, right next to you there in Virginia, there were Democrat votes being flipped Republican in voting machines. And in the state of California, 97,000 people who mailed in their ballots, mostly Democrats, their votes didn't count because they came in late.
Yeah,
well, conveniently.
That's a problem. We need to educate our voter base more. We definitely need to do that.
So in other words, Democrats losing it, their own fault.
Well, you know, I don't want to put us all in one bind. I'm going to vote. I've never missed an election. And I know there are many who listen to the program who would never miss an election either. But if you are listening and you are a Democrat, I'd encourage you not just to get yourself out there, but you know who it is. Get your friend, get your family member, get your cousin, get your uncle, get your spouse, whomever it is that you know. Get your kids who are 18 who don't necessarily vote in midterm elections.
Right.
Get them out. Get them vote.
Let's go to Brian in Eureka, California, line one. Hey, Brian, good afternoon. Welcome with me and Mark Levine. Question or comment?
Hi, Leslie. Hi, Mark. Thank you very much for taking my call. I've talked to both of you before, and it's a pleasure to talk to you again. I was going to wait till November 3rd to call you and encourage your audience to participate in the upcoming election, but since you brought up the topic, I'd like to weigh in, if I may.
Absolutely.
Just to let you know, I've been a registered nurse for 30 years, and I did a four-year hitch in the Navy as a Navy corpsman, so I have that background. My father is celebrating his 87th birthday this Monday, and my mother lived to her 90th year, and my grandmother lived to be 100. So
awesome.
I've got a lot of people that told me a lot about history. If you tell me that you're a progressive or a Democrat or independent, and you'd also tell me that you're fed up with Congress's do-nothingness or the opposing party obstruction, all I have to say is, you know, you better vote. You can't have it both ways by complaining and then abdicating your role in the process. If you don't vote, don't gripe. And if you don't vote, you're ensuring the oftentimes extremist candidates will prevail and win. And all I have to say to that is, thanks a lot.
Yeah. Mark?
Well, I couldn't agree more. I've long said, if you don't vote, you can't complain. I mean, I'm someone who felt that very personally. I ran for Congress, and 8% of registered voters voted in the June primary, which I did not win. But if another 8% had voted for me, I would have won handily. So I don't understand the people who complain day in, day out about the government. But one day, and frankly, today there's a lot of early voting. You can vote absentee. Really, to not vote, to me, I think it's one of the things you have to do as an American citizen. You got to get out and vote. It's part of your patriotic duty. I firmly believe that.
Oh, no questions about that. Let's talk about some of the we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue with my buddy Mark Levine, my co-host, every hump day, hour two, here on the program. I'm Leslie Marshall. Welcome back. Only True Democracy in Talk Radio of for and by you, the people. Mark Levine is my co-host in this hour. Also, he's on the East Coast. I'm on the West. Happy Hump Day. He's with me every hour or two, every Wednesday, Mark Levine. Follow him at Mark Levine Talk. Follow me at Leslie Marshall. We're talking about the midterm elections. Hey, Mark, are you with me?
I am. I should explain, if you hear noise in the background, I'm at the Washington Ideas Forum, actually. It's sponsored by the Atlantic Magazine, and I just heard from Susan Rice and from Attorney General Eric Holder and from Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel. So I've got lots of inside scoop from Washington policymakers.
So awesome. So let's get through some of these races, and then we'll talk about that on the other side of this hour. Arkansas is very red-leaning. Mark Pryor, the Democratic senator there, is under pressure. He's narrowed the gap by 2 points against Republican Tom Cotton, according to NBC News Marist poll. I find that pretty reliable poll, 43% to 45%. He's narrowed it by two. Do you think that's because of President Clinton being there, and is it not enough to make a difference?
I'm sure Clinton helps, but it's going to be really hard in Arkansas and Louisiana with Mary Landrieu. Basically, when you don't have an incumbent, like the Iowa race that we talked about, when you don't have an incumbent, really it's anybody's guess who can come up with a race. But the general political rule is that if an incumbent is behind a week before an election, they're toast. Obviously, I want Mark Pryor to win. I hope Bill Clinton can make the difference. But it's really hard for an incumbent polling at 44% or 43% to come back and win.
Three Democratic seats, Montana, South Dakota, they're saying, and West Virginia will almost certainly flip to Republican. I thought South Dakota was going to go to an independent.
You know, South Dakota is an interesting race, and we're not quite sure what's going to happen. It's also a very sparsely populated state. The independent is Larry Pressler, who's a former Republican senator, but he, like the independent in Kansas, has not said with whom he will caucus.
He made that comment about Obama, though, that he would vote with Obama.
It's really hard to know. South Dakota is a three-way race. Three-way races are notoriously hard to poll, and it's even possible Larry Pressler and Republican will split the vote and the Democrat will win, though I'm not holding my breath. Anything can happen in South Dakota. If I had to predict, again, I don't want this to be right, but if I had to predict, I would predict Republican wins a small plurality of the vote and not the majority. But who knows? Larry Pressler's been moving up in the polls. It's conceivable any of those three candidates could win that race.
Arkansas, it looks like it'll go Republican, as will Colorado and Louisiana. They say they're barely...
I'm not giving up on Colorado yet, actually.
And what about North Carolina and New Hampshire? I'm reading Democrats are barely holding on, not by the numbers I'm seeing. I'm showing a very tight race, and as a matter of fact, Kay Hagan has done a couple of things that I think were really stupid when you have such a high military presence, also not showing up for a debate. But what do you think? Do you really think Scott Brown's going to sweep New Hampshire and Kay Hagan's going to lose North Carolina?
No, I think Gene Shaheen will win in New Hampshire.
Me too.
I think Kay Hagan can, yes, I do. I really do. I think.
No, I do too. I agree with you.
Yeah, and I think Kay Hagan may well pull it out in North Carolina, though it's going to be very, very close there.
Okay, and then very quickly, Georgia. I do think Sam Nunn's daughter is going to win, and I hope she does. I loved her dad, and I really hope she gets it.
Actually, I like her better than her dad. I like Michelle Nunn better than Sam Nunn. Sam Nunn was a little too conservative as a Democrat for me on a number of issues. She has to be conservative. She's in Georgia, but she's not as bad on some of the issues as her father was. So
yeah, he definitely was more of a blue dog Democrat. He was a very, very kind man. I had the opportunity to meet him. He was, Mark, do you know, every time he was on my show, he sent me a handwritten thank you.
That's very sweet. I can't say I met the man in person. I'm only talking about his political views.
Yeah, so politics, he's definitely to the right of me and you, definitely.
Right.
We will be back. Mark Levine's my buddy. We'll be back and find out where he is, what's going on, and some new news out of that and other things. Midterm elections 1 week away. Please vote. Levine is joining me. Mark Levine joins me every hour two, every Wednesday. He is my co-host and partner in crime here on the program. I'm Leslie Marshall. He's Mark Levine. He's in D.C. I'm in L.A. And Mark, you are speaking to us live today from the Washington Ideas Forum. You had mentioned you heard Chuck Hagel, Eric Holder, Susan Rice speak. So first of all, before you tell us what you heard from Hagel, Holder, and Rice, what is the Washington Ideas Forum? Although the title would seem to be pretty, a no-brainer. Tell us, does it really mean that?
Well, it does. It's sponsored by Atlantic Magazine and the Aspen Institute. Apparently, it's been going on for some years, although this is the first time I've been invited to attend. It is invitation only, so I feel special. They take a lot of movers and shakers and thinkers throughout the Washington area, and they stick us all in a room where we share ideas. And it's not just the people on stage. I've talked with a woman who worries about green development and actually helps write laws to help green development. I've talked with a guy that is on one of the main education magazines in the country. I talked with a mayor of a small town in Georgia. I talked with the technology editor of the Washington Post. Just all kinds of different interesting people, entrepreneurs and scientists and doctors, and yes, lots of politicians, of course, but not only politicians in Washington, also thinkers of all kinds.
Tell us what Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel had to say.
Well, Chuck Hagel, I thought his most interesting thing was the clear admission that this is not going to be a short battle, that what we're doing in Iraq and Syria is going to last quite a while. I think this is very honest in a way that the president, I think, knows is true, but is afraid to tell us this hard truth. I think he's kind of told us a little bit, but Chuck Hagel made it very plain that there's no easy out here, and that this is something that's gonna be happening.
You didn't talk about Ebola and the 21 days for the military.
Oh, he did talk about that, actually. He did say that he signed that order today, in fact, and that they're going to reevaluate it after 45 days. It seems a little extreme to me. One of the things that I think can happen is that I think that one of the things I've in fact suggested was that you should take the people who've been exposed and have them come in once a day for a fever check. And if they have no fever, you know, there's no reason to quarantine that nurse in New Jersey. If they don't have a fever, then let them go about their daily business. What we found is that even the doctor Spencer in New York, who went to the bowling alley and changed subways three times, everyone was complaining about, it doesn't appear to have affected anybody. Basically, until you get the fever, you're safe. And so I think there are easier ways to go about it, but he did indicate that they're going to reevaluate it after 45 days. So I think it's a little tough.
And speaking of, because you're a lawyer, talk to me about the legal right of the nurse in Maine who tested negative for Ebola and now is refusing to stay home in quarantine as the governor has requested that she does. What are her legal rights when it's not the law of the land in Maine or on a federal level, correct, to be quarantined, and she had in the past tested negative for Ebola?
Right. You know, it's an interesting legal case. You have a right to due process. The government cannot incarcerate you without some kind of due process, some kind of hearing. Now, I do think if you had an active Ebola patient, I think for public health purposes, I think the government would be right, actually, in quarantining you. But her argument, and I think the science backs her up, is that, as I said, no fever, you know, no fever, no crime, right? Until and unless you have a fever, you should be allowed to be out and about. And I also think that sometimes this scares people into thinking Ebola is more dangerous than it is. I mean, again, and the people that have gotten Ebola in the United States have gotten it through very late stage patients it's really that hospital in Dallas is the only case of transmission in the United States, and that's because they didn't do best practices with a very late stage Ebola patient. So I think that the governors are acting for political reasons. I think they've gone too far.
Okay, they've gone too far. Legally, do they or does she have a leg to stand on? I asked because they were asking attorneys to.
I think she does. I think she does. I think, look, the government has to have, obviously, if you've committed a crime, they can put you in jail, but she's committed no crime. But for public health reasons, I think the government does have a right to quarantine you, but only based on science. And it doesn't appear that this is being based on science. Look, most of these healthcare providers, let's face it, these are good people who are working, who are caregiving people, who are trying to help. And most of these healthcare providers would do the right thing and come in and report once a day for a fever or something like that. And I think she would be willing to do that. If you've seen her quarantine and you've seen the room she's forced to live in, I think you can see why she's complaining.
Wow. So much. Susan Rice, what did she have to say at this conference?
Susan, actually, and Eric Holder were both particularly charming. I really enjoyed it. They asked some questions that weren't just about your policy, but also about personal things. She was asked who they want to play her life story. She said Holly Berry, and everybody cheered that. I'd say her most interesting thing was talking about relations with Russia. And she pointed out all the ways in which Russia was not being beneficial. And her point was that the sanctions really do have bite. And they're quite serious, and they're really harming Russia and harming the Russian economy. But as she pointed out, that despite all of that, on issues like Iran, Russia agrees with us. So even despite the fact that relations with Russia are probably as bad as they've ever been, that doesn't mean there aren't places to cooperate, even with Vladimir Putin.
What would you say, and Eric Holder, I mean, he's the outgoing attorney general. What did he have to say?
I was actually my favorite of the three, and I liked all three of them. Eric Holder, maybe because he's leaving, I think could be even more open, even more honest. And he said some things that actually surprised me just in their directness. He was asked what he changed, if he could change anything. And he said that he would not have issued the subpoena to James Rosen, the Fox reporter, calling him a co-conspirator in the way that he had. He said he had to do they used that language for legal reasons. They could have found other legal ways not to say that, and that that's the thing that he most regrets, because he does not want any journalist ever to go to jail for the release of classified information. He said that the person who releases the classified information, they can go to jail, but the reporter should never go to jail. And then he was asked a tough question, well, what about requiring reporters to give their sources, where, you know, you're not really jailing the reporter, but you basically are, because you're saying jail them unless they give their sources. And he said that he really thinks within the next few months they'll have worked out a deal so this never has to come again, that they'll have some strict guidelines, and he hopes to have that by the time he leaves office. And I thought that was news-breaking. He wants Denzel Washington to play him in the movie about his life. He also, by the way, they asked what his guilty pleasure was, and apparently he binge-watches Homeland. So that's maybe more than you wanted to know about the Attorney General, but a little bit of inside information on Attorney General Eric Holder.
Would you say that the people that attend this, being that the speakers are working for the Democratic President of the United States, President Barack Obama, are mostly of our ilk and mindset, to the left, liberals, progressives?
John Barrasso, Senator Barrasso of Wyoming, was also up here. There was a smattering of Republicans. Of course, Chuck Hagel is a former Republican senator, even though he was Obama's Secretary of Defense. Look, Washington leans liberal. The District of Columbia, even before President Obama ran, was always 90% for the Democrats. But, you know, these are policymakers in Washington. These are scientists. These are very educated people. Of course, they lean left. But there's certainly a smattering of, more than a smattering, probably even a third Republicans or so. I had a wonderful conversation with a libertarian economist. Just these are the kind of conversations that go on in the hallway. And what I really liked about him is that he was very educated. And so much when I talk about the economy, even on Fox News, I find this sort of an uneducated response. They say something silly like that the President Obama stimulus didn't help the economy, which is just any economist knows that's just bunk. But we had a much deeper discussion. In fact, I'd like to bring him on the show at some point to talk about, you know, where the differences are, because the differences between a liberal economist like myself and a libertarian economist like him are much smaller than people reasonably imagine. They're usually over the effectiveness of this program or that program, not silly things like, the government doesn't stimulate the economy or silly things like that.
I want to know what you took away from this, mostly.
I'd say that though, there's a lot of people with a lot of good ideas. By the way, they're not just Washingtonians here. I want to be fair. Like I said, there's this mayor for the small town in Georgia. There are people here, a Boston University professor I talked to, a guy from Los Angeles. So it's not only – but I think I came away with the fact that a lot of people just want to work together. I mean, they'd like to see – Republicans and Democrats, they'd like to see a functional Congress. One idea I came away from, and it wasn't something that anyone proposed, but just something I came away with from the conference, is that – The Democrats are complaining that the Republican House will not allow the Senate's bills to come through. And, the Republicans are complaining that the Democrats won't allow their bills to come through the Senate that passed the House. And it just seems to me that the right answer would be to take Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi and Mitch McConnell and John Boehner and shut them all in the room and say, all right, we'll give you your immigration bill if you'll give us our corporate tax bill, and just make the kind of horse trading that should make Congress work. I think Democrats would accept some corporate tax reform if they could get the immigration bill and vice versa. And it just struck me that everyone's going in their corner, and really the leaders aren't trying to compromise the way they could. I think if Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi said we offered corporate tax reform for immigration reform and they said no, that might even help us in the elections. So I you've got to be thinking that both parties could do a lot more in terms of compromise.
Speaking of the elections, this is the final week. The midterm campaigns will end in a week next Tuesday when we vote. Hopefully, more and more people vote. It does show the Republicans, poll by poll, holding higher ground than the Democrats. Certainly, the dissatisfaction among the public with the president's leadership, the direction of our country, and the federal government's ability to deal with major problems are all a problem for the Democrats, according to a Washington Post ABC News poll. And there seems to be a pervasive sense of a nation in trouble. Do the Republicans historically fare better when that is the perception? And is the media to blame for this perception?
You know, I think it's a six-year itch. I think if you look at George Bush's six-year, you look at Bill Clinton's six-year, you look at Ronald Reagan's six-year, anytime you have an eight-year presidency, I think you'll find in the sixth year the country tends to want to look at someone new. And I actually think our country's doing pretty well. I think our economy is the strongest in the world. We're stronger than Europe. We're stronger than China. We're stronger than Japan. And that's largely due to President Obama's leadership. That's not just low unemployment, but a record stock market. It's also just growth. And now I think that doesn't hit the middle class because a lot of this growth is going to the wealthy, and that's where the Republicans are actually stymieing it. They're not, you know, the Democrats have done good with the economy writ large. What hasn't been done well is helping out working class people, you know, helping with the minimum wage, helping with immigration reform, all these, you know, infrastructure, jobs programs that would help the middle class. And if that's your concern, then you have even more reason to vote Democrat because that's what the Republicans have prevented from happening. So on the economy, I think Obama's doing well. Now, you know, Leslie, I've criticized President Obama's foreign policy, which I think has been a little reaction oriented rather than starting. But I think he's doing the right thing now. I don't know that I would do anything different in Ukraine. I don't know that I'd do anything different with ISIS. So, you know, as a foreign policy critic, I would say he's been a little late to the game. But I think he's doing the right things now. And I don't think foreign policy is mostly what moves America. I don't know why they're complaining about the economy now. Have they seen the economy in Europe? Have they seen the economy in China? Have they seen the economy in Japan? The whole world's suffering, but we're doing the best. And that's largely due to the president's leadership and the Federal Reserve's leadership, as far as I'm concerned.
And let's talk more about the upcoming elections. And, you know, there is, like you said, the economy's good. Why is it then the overwhelming majority say the country is badly off track and give the economy negative ratings? You know, when James Carville said back in the day, it's the economy, stupid, it is. But economic expectations are a little better today than they were at this time 4 years ago. The economy is much better. So why do we still have this very negative rating system by the American public, the potential voters regarding the economy? I understand people feeling when they turn on the news and see ISIS and Ebola and doom is gloom, they're all going to hell in a handbag, which Republicans love to do. They love to campaign with fear. Fear and Jesus. Those are their, you know, two things. Those are their ace up their sleeves, fear and Jesus. And if you can be fearful of Jesus, all the better, right? I don't get it regarding the economy because you do have a lower deficit. You do have more job creation. You do have a lower unemployment rate. You do have a stronger economy. You definitely have a stronger stock market, Wall Street.
You know, if Mitt Romney had won the elections of 2012, then I'm quite confident the Republicans would say, look, unemployment has gone down from almost 10% to below 6%. The stock market's at record highs. Oil prices are at record lows. And, you know, more people have jobs than ever. Inflation is non-existent. The economy is fantastic. Are you better off than you were 4 years ago? Of course you are. I'm sure they'd be citing the exact same statistics to praise, in this case, President Obama's Remain president. And I don't think he's gotten the credit he deserves, particularly on the economy. Like I said, I'm willing to have to understand some criticism at the foreign policy level, but not at domestic policy. On the economy, which is the most important thing to all Americans, I think he's done a bang-up job. The one economic criticism I have is I do think that middle-class and working-class people are not getting their fair shake, and I think there's income inequality, but if anyone's been preventing that, it's the Republicans. President Obama has tried very hard to fix that, and they just haven't let him.
We're going to take a break. I have so much to talk to you about, Mark, so hang tight with us here on the only true democracy in talk radio of for and by you, the people. You want to join in? We're talking about the midterm elections coming up a week away. I am talking with my buddy and yours, Mark Levine, my co-host every hour or two here on the program. Follow him on Twitter at Mark Levine Talk. Check out the website, marklevinetalk.com.